Here's another one from London. As for the proceedings in Parliament, it is thus. Since their last assembly, they have had us in direct debates among them in their both houses of Parliament. And it was supposed by many, desired by all our enemies, that the bill prepared against us by the House of Commons be sent up to the upper house at their last sessions, of which you have had a former account. It was divers times under consideration, both in the House and by the committee appointed for that end, of which committee were 6 bishops. And there wanted not zeal in many to affect the carrying of it on. This is a bill to be passed in Parliament against the Quaker. 6 bishops would make a pretty weighty one-sided group in the committee, I think. Last 6th day they adjourned to the 7th of next month. This is the sum of the present proceedings in relation to us. There is a certain hand of the Lord in ordering these matters, and yet hath hitherto prevented the purpose of our adversary, and brought to naught the counsel of such as desired our destruction long ere this day. But let friends walk in the fear and the wisdom and the counsel of the Most High. Let all the world have nothing against you of evil in the things of this world, nor anything save in the matters of God, and for his worship's sake. And if we are persecuted and suffer as such only, that is only for religious offenses, not for real civil offenses, and if this we are persecuted, suffer only for such, and for this cause the Lord will be our peace and everlasting reward. Here's another letter. This is written from Colchester in Norfolk not to Margaret Fell, but she must have gotten it finally, written to William Dewsbury, another one of the travelers. Dear and precious brother in the eternal, unchangeable truth of God, I do in my measure dearly salute thee. Thou art blessed of the Lord, dear brother. Thy fatherly care over me do I own. I think James Parnell was 16 when he wrote this. Already preaching, and you'll see how he is. I'm kept and nourished in the midst of mine enemies. Glory be to God the highest, who hath counted me worthy to bear the bonds of the gospel. Dear brother, glad I am to hear from thee, and of my dear brother Thomas Stubbs with thee, whom I do love in the Lord, and the rest of thy fellow prisoners. The Lord has set thee a father over them. I know thy burden is great, for the work lies upon thee, but thy joy is in thy children. Truly there is a great appearance, that means a great turnout of people for Quakerism. But there is much want of ministers since I was cast in bonds. But a pretty liberty I had amongst them before they were suffered to lay hold of me. And great was the work of the Lord, and mightily did it spread to my great comfort. And now these bonds have been very serviceable to the piercing of the hearts of many, and the discovery of the spirits of my persecutors, and to the confirming of those in the truth that were convinced. They have labored to make my bonds grievous, but my strength the Philistines know not. Friends are much barred from me, yet not all. He's in prison in a solitary little cell, high up from the ground, and gradually starving to death. Our tender sister, M.S., is here in bonds in the town prison. She was put in last evening for speaking to a priest. She hath been in twice before this within a week, but they had not power to keep her in. So may the same power that keeps thee keep me, and let thy prayers be for me. I rest with thee in the brotherly unity, thy tender brother, James Parnell. This is addressed to my dear brother William Dewsbury in the common jail at Northampton. There's a fellow feeling between them. Dewsbury didn't die in Britain, but he spent most of his life there. I think you see that the personal bond in these letters. Now the other collection of material is an interesting collection. Quakerism wasn't 25 years old before they began looking back and saying we must keep a record. And for that period of history, and for such a only semi-literate group, and for such a small group, that's a rather unorganized group, that's a rather interesting thing to do. But no sooner had they formed one central meeting in England than they wrote to every county, to the Quirlymeans in each county and said, please answer for each friends meeting in your county. And that meant they had to write down to the local meeting to get the answers to these six questions. Who first brought Quakerism to that community? Who received them? That is, local people received. Who was the visitor, brought the message? Who received them? What sufferings did they have? What friends died as a result of persecution? What persecutors were converted to Quakerism? The answers to those were pretty few. And finally, what divine judgments have fallen upon those who persecuted Quakers? That means, what untimely end has come to them? Those six questions were set out in 1676 and again in 1705 and again in 1720, persistently half a generation apart. They kept trying to collect this information. Well, even after three such efforts, they only apparently got about half the answers they wanted. But that's quite a lot. You see, there are quite a few counties there. And that's quite a lot. And those that did come in, at least are some of them, those that were known in 1907 were published in this book. It's great fun to hunt around among Quaker records and run into another one. Never got in this book. These are mostly were collected in London, but if you go out all over England and look at the Quaker records, you may find one. Some years ago, I had the pleasure of stopping in at Lancaster. Yep, Lancaster's right up there near Margaret Fell's home. And by looking through a book, I found a long account of the answers to a lot of the meetings right around there. And many of them telling about Margaret Fell and George Fox's experience right in that territory. Well, that's not in here, but it just has been printed. Well, this is a very interesting collection, I think. I wish the early church had done that. Wouldn't it be nice if the early church had kept a record of how Christianity first came? We know so little about how Christianity came to various places. I wish also they'd done it in America, but they didn't. They only did it in England and Wales, not even in Scotland. But here's a list of the counties they wrote to, and a list of those that haven't yet answered. And this book, of course, shows who hadn't answered. That's like keeping up a class list, isn't it? See who's in arrears. I suppose I'll read a sample or two from this material. You see, it's taken quite from the other point of view. You have the letters of an itinerant minister, and you have the journal of a man that had been an itinerant minister. And then you have, taken from the local point of view, it gives you sort of dovetail in. One thing that interests me is that a lot of these people don't say that Fox was the first person that came there. No. These auxiliary workers were among them. Well, now let's see. I have one or two places marked here. Way down in Devonshire. Cornwall, this is, Rob. Right down in the corner here. A short account, this is the answer to the questionnaire. A short account of what we remember of those friends that first came hereaway and of their suffering and service in publishing the everlasting gospel. About the year 1658, it pleased the Lord to send his ministers and servants, George Bewley and James Myers, here, who were kindly received by Charles Peters and his wife, and lodged at their house, where they had several meetings, and several were convinced of the blessed truth. You see, this is straight, they're answering straight on the ball, aren't they? Again, remind me of a problem that teachers sometimes have of getting answers to questions. When you get them, you like them just as direct as this. The first day after they came, George went to Minver Steeple House. and after the priest had ended his service, spoke to him, but was soon dragged forth out of the house, and sorely abused, very likely to have been thrown over the wall of the graveyard, had not the Lord been pleased to raise up some that stood on his side and rescued him out of the cruel hands of his enemies. And the same first day, as the very first Sunday after they got there, when services were being held in all the local churches, the other one, James Myers, and the same first day, James went to Endillion Steeple House and spake to the priest, but was not so much abused as George was. He had good service there, and from thence was invited to Joan Rowe's house, where he was kindly received, and her son Abram Rowe and Melior, her daughter, were both convinced. And in some short time after, they came together again and had good service in several places. Well, that's just part of the answer from Cornwall, and from these two down there. Falmouth, the major town in Cornwall, seaport town, south coast. Our answer to those particulars following, ordered by friends at the yearly meeting, the 17th of 3rd month, 1676, to be observed and recommended to us by friends at the last quarterly meeting. This explains where they'd gotten the questionnaire from. First part, that friends keep an exact account of those that first brought the message of glad tidings amongst them. Answer, the first that brought the message of glad tidings unto us was George Bewley and James Joseph Cole and James Myers and Anne Blackley, Alexander Parker and Thomas Curtis, two of the ones that have been elsewhere, but he names this. Second, that the sufferings of those first messengers be likewise recorded. Answer, Anne Blakely was in a short time after brought before Richard Lobb, a justice so-called, they love that phrase, a justice so-called, justice of the peace, for declaring the word of the Lord, and was by him sent to the county jail. What friends received their message? Third question. There did receive their message Francis Hawes, John Tregellis, Thomas Phillips, Peter Odger, and John Rail, and others. The first settled meeting was at Francis Hodges' house. Fourth question. To keep a record of the names, travels, and unblameable conversation of all the ablest ministers that are deceased. They left a blank for that. They weren't able to fill that in. After the blank, the fifth question. What judgment fell upon persecutors? Answer. Would you like to hear that? Christopher Gwynne, being constable of Falmouth, having been put on by a soldier, one William Duncalf, took up Francis Hodge and Richard Mills for keeping on their hats when a proclamation was read. Royal proclamation, they kept their hats on. Of course, they shouldn't do that. And put them with a guard to Pendennis Castle before the governor, who tendered them the oath, and upon refusal sent them with a guard to the mayor of Penryn, who likewise tendered them the oath, and upon refusal made their minimus, and delivered to the said Christopher Gwynne, who sent them to the county jail. After this, Christopher Gwynne was chosen mayor of Falmouth, and he, being intended to persecute friends, called a hail, and gave command to bring friends before him to take the oath. But we took little notice of it, neither did we appear. Whereupon he arose from the bench in great fury and said, I will make them know that I am a magistrate, and gave strict command to bring us before him the day following. But before the next day came, the Lord was pleased to cut him off. For that same night he went to bed well as at other times, and the next morning was found dead. Isn't that pretty clear evidence of divine intervention? I must look up the town records of Falmouth and see whether I can confirm the date. Yeah?
The first month that they refer to is not January, it's March.
When
is
the first?
The first month is not January, it's March, isn't it?
It was then March, but it's January now. They avoided the names of the months because of their heathen connection. Just as they avoid the names of the days of the week. So they gave numerical names to days of the week and numerical days of the month. And all depends when the calendar year begins. If it begins the 25th of March, well, then March is the first month. If it begins the 1st of January, then January is the first month. Very confusing, reading back in history to get those right. Well, I read some more of this. It's very edifying. A short time after, friends being peacefully met together to wait upon the Lord, came soldiers from Pendennis Castle, intending to do us some mischief. But our meeting was ended before they came. Nevertheless, they entered into a friend's house in the village and took away one of our friend's coats, a man named John Croby, which was worth about 4 nobles, 40 shillings. A while after, one of the soldiers named William Bright, which was the chief instrument therein, died miserably. His flesh did rot from his bones. I won't read the next one, it's too long. This man had trouble with his bull, died a miserable death. I'll read that probably another day.